Welcome to the Money Tree Investing Podcast. Stock market, wealth, personal finance, value stocks. Invest in your life.
Thanks for tuning in to the Money Tree Investing Podcast, your source for investing and money matters. I'm your host, Andrew Sather from eInvestingForBeginners.com, and we will be joined with decades of experience from our panel at the end of the show. We've been getting a lot of requests to do a show about tax management, so that's what we've got for you today. Been getting a lot of questions about the Roth IRA. We're going to cover that. We have a special guest who's going to not only share his interesting story, but also give us a lot of tips and different things we can do with a Roth IRA and some of the strategies that we can use to really maximize our tax management. First, a word from our sponsors. Before we jump in, let me tell you about something cool. It's an unusual 15-second quiz that can automatically pinpoint and eliminate your number one profit-killing mistake. And once you do this, you can find out how you can risk as little as $25 to make $100. I took the quiz myself, and I'll tell you this, the results did surprise me. It took just 15 seconds, and best of all, it's free for Money Tree listeners for a limited time. Just go to moneyquiz107.com and take the quiz before your next trade. Remember, it takes just 15 seconds to pinpoint and eliminate your number one profit-killing mistake at moneyquiz107.com. That's moneyquiz107.com. Don't forget, trading involves risk of loss and is not appropriate for everyone. Today's guest is a special one. He was born in the ghetto, never finished fourth grade, yet despite all of that and despite the odds, he became a millionaire by the age of 35. He was a co-founder of BDS Inc. and later on got recruited by PepsiCo to be CFO of one of their newly acquired companies. And he hosts the Wealth DNA radio show with the mission of helping 1 million people to become millionaires. Our guest is Ron Nowrocki. Ron, thanks for coming on. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, my pleasure. With an introduction like that, I should probably talk very little.
No, I'm hoping you'll talk much more than I will, because I really want to hear your story. I mean, sure. It's fascinating. You say you were born in a ghetto and you never finished fourth grade, yet you were able to build wealth and become really successful in the financial world. So how were you able to do that? Like, can you give us like a breakdown from the beginning? What were some of the things that helped you become successful and, despite all odds, find success even without doing the traditional route of maybe finishing certain parts of school?
Mm-hmm. Well, I did eventually go back to school, just so we don't scare away some of our listeners from cause them to drop out from college or something like that. Although some of my compatriots about my age have done pretty Bill Gates, Steve Jobs, may rest in peace. Others, they also didn't finish school, though most of them finished fourth grade. I just didn't. But so I did do that. I think probably one of the very keys is I grew up with the Depression mentality. My parents both grew up in the Depression. And so I became a good saver. I was actually able to do my first real estate deal when I was 15 years old as a result. So I think saving was one of those big factors. Without it, you just can't build wealth. If you can't get started, you're not going to get there. So I think that's really a big one. Another one is I wanted to live somewhere other than the ghetto. I just realized this is not where I want to spend the rest of my life. There is a world out there. It looks a lot better than where I'm living. And people out there that are probably a lot smarter than I am. And want to learn from them and want to succeed and basically to allow my parents to eventually helping them escape that kind of lifestyle as well.
So you talk about basically doing a real estate deal when you were 15. How did that happen? Did you you said you were a great saver. I mean, what kind of saving are we talking about? Is it like $10 or are we talking you're able to save a substantial amount to help with this deal?
Well, let me take you back in perspective, because this was back in the 70s before the big, actually late 60s, before the big inflationary boom in the Jimmy Carter era. So building a house was about $20,000, and a family happened to be building a home. They ran into some problems with the contractor and then just ran short. They didn't, weren't really qualified to get a bank loan. Does that sound familiar? And same time, they'd already invested an awful lot and needed some help to get moving. I had saved up well over, I guess it was about $1,000. It doesn't sound a lot today, but remember that was, you know, 1/20th of the price, so 5% of the price of the house. So we'd be looking at probably today, that's closer to $10,000. But, you know, as a 15-year-old kid, that wasn't bad. So I basically, they asked me if I would lend the money to help them get this thing done, and I was one of several private lenders. And, you know, it just seemed like, okay, I can help them out, earn a decent interest rate better than I can get, you know, through the traditional banks at that time. I want to give it a try. I didn't realize what I knew at that point. I didn't keep doing it. That's the mistake I made. It's 35 years later. That's what I'm doing.
And that's what you do with the show over at wealthdna.us. Yes. You have this concept, I think it's really fascinating, called the Wealth DNA Framework. Mm-hmm. And in there, part of it is saying that 95% of people will never be wealthy. And you're saying, you know, if certain things didn't happen in your life, you could have been one of those people. So what is this big concept that people don't understand that they need in order to build wealth?
Okay, there's really, the Wealth DNA stands for, it's an acronym. DNA is the acronym for the three big obstacles that stop most of us from becoming wealthy. And very clearly, the first obstacle did not stop me, and that was D. The very first obstacle is desire. And I don't mean just wanting to, okay? Most people want to be wealthy, just like people that want to quit smoking or they want to lose weight. But it's the true desire and willingness to do what it takes. I found through my, you know, research, talking to people, seeing the numbers, about 50% of the people do not have even that D. They can't get past that obstacle. So they are addicted to poverty. Right? They just don't have the true desire, aren't willing to do what it takes. And again, I can use health as a good example. People say, well, I want to get healthier. I want to eat healthier. I want to start exercising. Maybe I want to quit smoking. I want to lose some weight. Any of those things, it's nice to say it, but are you willing to do it? Are you willing to do whatever it takes to get healthier? And same thing with wealth. It's the exact same thing. Am I willing to do what it takes? And one of those things I mentioned, my life saving was a big piece of it. A lot of people say, well, but there are so many things I want to buy now. You know, saving will be any wealth concepts like compounding. Don't work when you're 70. It's just too late. Saving is one of those key ones, but it hurts. You know, that means you're not going to do something else. So the first obstacle is that D. It's the true desire to be wealthy and doing what it takes. It's the dedication. It's the determination, the real desire to do that. The second one that holds them back is knowledge. That's the N is for knowledge. Now, some of you folks that went to school probably call it knowledge, and that's okay. You can call it knowledge if you want. I just happen to call it knowledge. But that's knowledge, and that's where really your show, even the Wealth DNA radio show, we really spend most of our time on that knowledge piece, helping people to understand what are the principles, what are the basics, what do I need to do to build my wealth. And again, once you have the desire, then the knowledge sinks in. Otherwise, you can go take all of these courses, but if you're not going to do something about it, you're not going to have the true desire, dedication to doing it, and then secondly, start getting the knowledge it takes to build wealth. And then the last one that stops the last probably 15 of 20% that make it through the first two obstacles is the action. Okay, yep, I absolutely do want to do it. I've gotten all of the education. Matter of fact, I'm still getting the education. There's so much to learn, and I'm just not going to pull the trigger on an investment until 100% sure, and there's some guarantees with it. Okay, don't take the action. It's not going to happen. All three will stop you. Two is not enough. One is not enough. You have to get through all three of those obstacles. So that's really the main framework, and the whole show is built around aspects of that, be it the D, the getting past that addiction to poverty, the N, where we spend a lot of time sharing different ways to make money. Of course, the action, getting people to find things that work.
So Ron, you talk about the three steps. You have the DNA, the desire, the knowledge, and the action. And
correct.
People can get caught up in any one of those steps, but you really need all three in order to succeed. So is there any one that you have, like a secret or some sort of maybe tactic or trick that people can implement right away? If a lot of my readers that come to my website, they talk about how they have this information overload, and they get paralyzed by all the information to the point where they don't make any action. And so if someone's struggling either with the action or the knowledge or the desire part, what's one or two things they could do to really propel them past that obstacle?
number one. I would put number one on the list is learning to save. Number two is reading, finance and wealth generation. I mean, the very first book everybody should read when it comes to the financial side of things is The Richest Man in Babylon. I didn't know that book existed until about 3-4 years ago. A wonderful short book that everybody has to read. And it ties right back to saving.
It's one thing to talk about it. It's totally another to do it. And, you know, so we have investors have this issue of not only do you want to save on the front end, but you also want to save on the back end. And so I know from listening to some of your shows, you do talk about IRAs and the different vehicles that people can use to give themselves an advantage. However much you can save here and there can really affect your net worth and basically your bottom line in the long term. So for someone who doesn't know maybe what an IRA is, can you briefly introduce it and then talk about some of the things you can do to really maximize your benefits from IRAs?
Okay. First of all, legally an IRA is a trust. So when people talk about, trusts are only for the wealthy, then you better, you know, ignore IRAs because they are trusts. Legally, they are trusts. They're set up by the government many, many years ago, and we can put aside money with a tax benefit. And I think that's the key statement that should catch people's interest. There are two tax benefits. It's either I get forgiven the taxes when I put the money in, so in other words, I get a tax deduction for the money I put in, or I get forgiven on all of the money I take out at the end, and that's the Roth type that was added many years later. And those are the two major categories, a tax-deferred IRA or a taxed, never taxed forever Roth IRA. The other thing is I want to make sure people understand 401ks, 403bs, a number of specialized versions have both of those categories. Most of them use the traditional, the tax deferred type, but they also have available Roths in some of the 401k programs and some of the 403b programs. So you have to be aware of those two splits. You either get to deduct the money or you get the tax avoidance throughout the rest of your life with Roth. So those are the two types. I highly recommend everybody not just set them up, but set up every single type you're qualified to do.
To be clear, somebody, let's say we'll use an example, somebody in their mid-20s, that person can do not only a Roth IRA, but a traditional IRA, and you can actually balance the two and contribute to both. Does that increase, you know, you have like the contribution amounts every year. So
yes.
If you have two different IRAs, are you essentially doubling the contribution amount?
No, you're generally given a limit, and the limits are different. We'd get into a long discussion of all of the legal limitations of each one. So it is something somebody has to research. But the key decision is, what's my marginal tax rate? And there's the thing that most people ignore. Especially stuff, you know, maybe in their first job or their second job in today's cycle of things, and they look at their take-home pay and they see all of these deductions and they say, hey, I've got to do something to stop all of this money getting taken out of my paycheck. So the knee-jerk reaction is you set up a 401k if your employer or the organization you work with has a 401k, or you would set up a traditional IRA, because now the money I put in will reduce the amount of taxes I pay, that knee-jerk reaction. The problem is a lot of the deductions on there, Social Security, Medicare, maybe you've got an HSA at your work, unemployment tax, any of those things are not affected by the fact that you put money into an IRA. So those deductions still happen, so that there's kind of a knee-jerk reaction. And you might find as a young person, your marginal tax rate is 0 or 10%. So trying to save that 10% by putting money away, you might be better off putting more of it into a Roth, which allows, and again, you would have a choice of Roth or regular traditional IRA or a blend, but you can't put, for example, $10,000 or $15,000 into each of them. You are going to be limited. So you've got your choice, and I would say based on your marginal tax rate, the lower your marginal tax rate, the more you put in a Roth.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, this is completely, I know the debate between Roth and traditional, you know, runs pretty passionate. Some people are completely Roth people and some people aren't, and like you said, it really depends on the situation and your own
right. Personal
tax rates, and it's hard. It's not like a black and white answer, because not only do you have to determine what's your tax rate now, you have to estimate what's your tax rate going to be when you're withdrawing. in retirement. So those type of things can all factor in and contribute to this idea of whether you want to go Roth or traditional. So how about like self-directed IRAs? What's your opinion on those, and how can people use those or not use them?
Okay. First of all, we got to make sure that people understand there are self-directed IRAs in a marketing sense, and then there are true self-directed IRAs, okay? And let me differentiate. If you ask your broker or financial advisor, 98% of the people, this is the same 98% that are not wealthy, what's a self-directed IRA? And they say, well, you can set it up at any of the brokerage accounts, and you can then make your own decisions of how you invest. You can put it into individual stocks. You can make your own choices. You can put in mutual funds. You can buy a whole variety of different things, as long as they're Wall Street products. That's the traditional definition of a self-directed IRA, because Wall Street has done a wonderful job of brainwashing people to think that's the IRAs there are. And it's not true. There are true self-directed IRAs, and those IRAs allow me to invest in virtually anything other than artwork and most coins. So there's a huge gap between what people think of as self-directed IRA and what are marketed self-directed IRAs and true self-directed IRAs. Okay? And the easy test is ask the person who's trying to sell a vest in a rental property in my IRA. If their answer is absolutely not, you're talking to a Wall Street representative. If they say, well, of course you can, then you know you're talking to a custodian that has true self-directed IRAs. And there's a huge difference, very little known. 2% of the people use them, and guess how many people are wealthy? About 2%.
Right.
Must be coincidence.
I think that's a great segue into what I want to talk about next. So you talk about being able to choose where you want your investments to go. For somebody who's the individual investor, the average investor, what should their path be in these IRAs? I mean, now we've established, okay, we're going to go Roth or we're going to go traditional. Mm-hmm. We have the account set up. We have all of our taxes optimized. What's the next step? Do you think we should go out down the coast, drive by, and try to find rental properties that we like? Should we be jumping into the stock market? What's your take on the choices of investments that you make in an IRA?
Okay. Earlier in career, I would say, again, a lot of your money should be headed into the Roth, and that Roth is probably going to be set up in a traditional Wall Street setup. And whether it's through your employer on a 401k setup, or it is a Roth that you've set up on your own, the reason being, until you've accumulated, I'd say, probably about $50,000 in assets in that IRA, that specific IRA, not all of them, then it doesn't make economic sense to set it up as a true self-directed IRA. Okay, so if I have $10,000 set up in my Roth IRA, I can't go buy a rental property. It's just not going to happen. Okay, you can listen to all the, you know, late night TV you want. It's not going to happen. And I like rental properties in my cash accounts anyway. That's another story. But so the smaller investor, I'd say up to about that $50,000, should stick with some of the traditional mutual funds, which allow you to diversify at a low cost. And that can be used both in the traditional and the Roth, and that's fine. As it grows, now I truly think it makes sense to set up a true self-directed IRA, ideally in your Roth, because that's the one I'd really like to balloon. If I'm going to make money, I want it to be in my Roth, and let that one be a true self-directed IRA. Now I can start investing in private mortgage loans. I can start investing in real estate. If I want, I can invest in private companies. Heck, you can invest in Arabian horses if you wanted to, foreign companies. You're really very, very wide open. And what I would add is, and again, it adds a little bit to the cost and why it wouldn't make sense for a small account, but somebody with $50,000 or more, or actually buying that rental property right out of your own IRA checkbook. So there's a huge amount of control you have in a true self-directed IRA properly set up versus in the Wall Street IRA. But it's not appropriate for a small account. You are going to have fees associated with it that will eat up the cost, you know, the value, if you're not able to at least have enough in there to cover it, make enough money to cover those fees. Make sense?
Yeah, I think what's interesting too, correct me if I'm wrong, but when you do buy, let's say, a property with your IRA, you get all the same tax benefits that you would with the IRA, but now we're talking about receiving income checks and various cash flows that these rental properties provide you that you won't get outside of an IRA.
Correct. and you're not going to be paying the ongoing taxes on it. But most importantly, if that property appreciates by, let's say, 3% per year, it doesn't sound like a lot, but by the way, you can borrow money in an IRA, despite what Wall Street tells you, so you actually can leverage that deal. I'm not saying there aren't some consequences, but you can leverage it. It's all legal, so that you could do a rental property just like most people buy a home where you have, let's say, 30% down and a mortgage on it, and therefore that appreciation multiplies. So at the end, when you pull that money out, you're not paying any taxes on it. Is the appreciation, you're going to have to pay some pretty hefty taxes since you've been, you know, in a cash account. So nonetheless, I totally agree with you. There are some huge benefits. Somebody doing fix and flips, talk about an ideal situation. Many of my millionaire friends have become that way because they did fix and flips in their Roth IRA. No taxes.
That's so cool. Do you have any experience with, I think they have special IRAs for business people. We have a lot of business people who own businesses, business-minded people who listen to our podcast. And so Do you have any experience with, I know you can do similar things where if you have a business, you can set up a business IRA and The contributions in there will be even higher than if you were just doing it individually.
Correct. And I've only used the SEP IRA, which is the simplified IRA for business people. The huge advantage is it's much like a 401k, but on steroids, the amount I can deduct. It's not a $5,000 a year limit. I literally can deduct a percentage of my income up to, and it always, of course, has to be earned income, but I can go up into like, you know, $15,000-$20,000 a year. These are huge amounts that I can deduct. There are also accounts, solo 401k probably being the best of those, that gives you almost total flexibility where you can, and the tax consequences of even taking loans go away in a solo 401k. So yes, business people need to meet with people who understand those programs. Set up an organized 401k. So you don't have to be a billion-dollar company to have a 401k for you and your employees. You can set it up just for yourself as an entrepreneur. That is what a whole idea behind a solo 401k. So great programs out there. It's a matter of meeting with somebody that knows how to do them. And again, a great way to shelter a lot of income that, you know, small businesses, that's where the money is made. It's not sitting in an office earning a paycheck. It's small businesses that ultimately, as they become successful through their hard work, earn a lot of money, and they want to shelter some of that money so that they can take advantage of it for future years and even pass it on to future generations. Great vehicles. If you can, do it.
I agree. You know, the tax implications of living in the United States are pretty substantial, and if anything you can do to alleviate that will really help you build your wealth. And like you said, it just compounds over time, and it's really a great way to create this DNA structure for yourself and give yourself the best opportunity to become wealthy. So I really enjoyed the concepts you shared here, Ron. And if people are interested more in this IRA stuff and setting up maybe a SEP IRA or, you know, managing various IRAs and even the Wealth DNA framework, I thought that was fascinating. We could find you wealthdna.us. Is there any other place for people to go online, or is that the main?
That's the best one. I obviously run a real estate fund, BI Solutions Corp. And so bisolutions.econunion. But really the best place, if you Google my name, Ron Norocki, N-A-W-R-O-C-K-I, you'll find me. And, you know, whether it's through LinkedIn, I'm on Twitter and Facebook and all of those good things. Fortunately, my assistant knows how to do that stuff. But Wealth DNA, you'll find me. You'll be able to hear a lot of what we do, how we've helped people. And again, part of our goal is help people, 1 million people become millionaires. So hopefully each one of your listeners, thanks for the work you do, but let's help each of those listeners be part of that million.
I think that's great. You definitely got the dollar signs flowing in my head, and I'm already thinking of all the different possibilities of what I'm going to do personally once I get my IRA account to significant amounts. So again, thank you for your time, Ron, and have a good one.
Step one, set it up. Have an IRA, have multiple types, and that'll be your first step, and you'll do well.
Okay, time for a quick break from our sponsor. Don't forget to take that unusual 15-second quiz I mentioned earlier. It's the one that pinpoints and eliminates your number one profit-killing mistake. Once you do that, you'll find out how you can risk as little as $25 to make $100. It's easy. Do yourself a favor and go to moneyquiz107.com before your next trade. That's moneyquiz107.com. For the few next days, it's free for MoneyTree listeners. For the last time, that website is moneyquiz107.com. Don't forget, trading involves risk of loss and is not appropriate for everyone. Let's move on to the discussion. Before I introduce our esteemed panel, I did have a chance to talk to Ron a little bit after the interview, and he had some points he wanted me to share with the audience that he thought really brings the whole argument home about the importance of these different IRAs and really tax advantage accounts, and especially the Roth. So something to consider that I think a lot of people don't understand until they actually get to that point is that once you get into Social Security age, so like around 70 years old, then your marginal tax rate rises up to 85% of Social Security is taxable. So that's another benefit to doing the Roth, is that if you have the Roth, even though you're withdrawing Social Security and your marginal tax rate will rise, you won't get that hit because you paid the taxes up front with a Roth IRA. Another point that Ron had was that he said, let's say you get into a financial struggle and you have a need where you need to pull some cash out and you're not yet 59 and a half where you can pull money out of an IRA without penalty. The options are you can borrow against your 401k, which is going to be very, very expensive. You can withdraw from your IRA and pay taxes plus a penalty. Or the third option, if you have a Roth, you can withdraw the principal as long as the Roth account you opened was opened 5 years ago or longer. So he says he wants to tell everybody, make sure you start a Roth and have it started at least 5 years ago. If you can't do that, obviously do it today. And everybody qualifies to convert an IRA into a Roth, so there's no excuse to not start your Roth IRA, and that could really jumpstart your path to wealth. So today on the panel, we have Shannon McKay filling in for Joe Saul Sehy. What was your website, Shannon?
My website is financialgym.net. I am a financial planner and entrepreneur, and I work mostly with millennials, helping them get and stay financially fit.
Awesome. Well, thank you for joining us today for Joe as he's on vacation.
Glad to be here.
And of course, Miranda Marquit from PlantingMoneySeeds.com, esteemed traveler. How are your travels lately?
Really good. I went to Podcast Movement. It was awesome. And I think we'll have a few more interesting guests to have on. I met some really cool people with some really interesting areas of investment. So I'm looking forward to that.
Awesome. Awesome. And Andrea Trevelyan from TakeASmartStep.com. Did you get your caffeine fix yet today?
Oh, yes. I'm good.
All right. I like it. A little pep in your step. Let's do it. And of course, I am your host for today, Andrew Sather from eInvestingForBeginners.com. So let's jump right in. What are some of the tax advantage vehicles you personally use for retirement? I know Ron and I discussed a few, and I'm sure there's a couple others that we missed. Everybody has their favorite. So I'll start with you, Shannon. Which ones do you personally use for retirement, and do you have a favorite?
I am a personal fan favorite of the 401k or 403b because of the tax advantage. And also if your company gives you a match, then it's a great solution. I own my own company and I do not have a 401k for it. I use a SEP IRA for that. And for business owners, I think it's a great solution. My husband's a teacher, though. And in addition to that, I also have an IRA from that's been rolled over from my 401ks from previous companies. And I enjoy investing in those as well. Unfortunately, I never was able to contribute to a Roth IRA because of the income restraints that I had in my career.
Can you talk about the SEP IRA? What is that and why is it beneficial? Because I know we have a lot of business owners who do listen to our podcast.
Yes, the SEP IRA is one of the solutions that you have if you're a business owner. You get the tax advantage of an IRA, so it's a tax deductible contribution, and you're allowed to contribute up to 25% 5% of your compensation, and that could be upwards of $52,000 in a tax year. So it's incredibly beneficial, especially if you have a successful company, because most other IRAs have lower limits, as well as 401k, and that really allows you to get the most bang for your tax advantage buck.
Okay, yeah. I don't think we've ever talked about this. We might have talked about a SEP before, but it's good to get the complete breakdown now that we're talking all about taxes. Miranda, do you have a favorite tax shelter or tax advantage account?
Yeah, so I use a Roth IRA for my regular retirement account, as we all know. But my favorite is, and I've talked about this before, is the health savings account. You do have to have a high deductible plan in order to qualify. And there are also some other qualifications that you need to meet in order to have a health savings account. But what I like about the health savings account is that you get a tax deduction for the money you put in. And then the money you put in grows tax-free as well, as long as you use it for qualified healthcare expenses. And then it turns into just like a traditional IRA after the age of 59 and a half. If you want to withdraw the money for something that's not a qualified expense, it does revert into like a traditional IRA setup. But I plan to use the health savings account as it's sort of my retirement medical fund, I guess. And I try not to use it now and just let the money build up for later. So the combination of the Roth IRA with the health savings account is really powerful for me. Although I am looking into a SEP, like what Shannon mentioned as well, that's something I'm considering. But between those two accounts, though, right now, I'm getting a great tax advantage, and the money, there's, you know, for family, right now the HSA contribution is $6,000 a year. So it's even higher than an IRA contribution limit. So it's just something to think about. And the combination of the two together is just super fantastic.
So you can contribute max to an HSA and then also max to an IRA. Is that what you're saying?
Are two different types of accounts. It's just acts like a traditional IRA once you get to 59 and a half and you start taking money out. If you only use it for healthcare expenses, you can take it out whenever you want for healthcare expenses, and it's tax-free money all the way.
And that's cool how after 59 and a half, it's basically like an IRA. So if you didn't spend everything, then it's almost like your own savings plan, right?
Yeah. It's just like another retirement account. So
gotcha. Yeah, that's cool. Andrea, do you have a favorite?
I love all of them. my personal favorite is actually the Roth IRA, because there's so many benefits to it. You know, you never have to tap into it. You put the money in, you don't have to tax it coming out. You know, it is my absolute hands down favorite account. And I use the Roth, I use the traditional, and the 401k. So I use a combination of all of those. So, a lot of things people don't know is, even if you're above the limit for doing the deduction on the traditional IRA for your income purposes, you can still do it as a non-deductible. So even though you're paying taxes on the front end, it is growing tax-free, and then you don't, you know, that portion doesn't get taxed on the back end. So I do that for my husband, and then I contribute to a traditional and then roll to a Roth to avoid all the taxes. Since I have nothing but Roths, I can do that without it being overly complicated. So even if you are a high income earner, there's a lot of ways to get into those accounts. You just have to be working hand in hand with your CPA.
Gotcha. So I actually have a question for you, since, you know, last week, episode 49, I believe it was, we kind of talked about somebody who's in college and what they should do with the extra money that they have. And I thought, I really liked your answer, Andrea. You said, because somebody is so young, they should really save those for expenses when they graduate. And so if let's say somebody who's a couple years down that path, this is kind of a selfish question, but let's say we have a 401k with a previous company and we really like the Roth, but because we're so young, it's hard to have money set aside to pay for the taxes if we were to roll it over to a Roth. Do you think somebody who's young should roll it over to a Roth, or just roll it over to a regular IRA?
Well, first of all, please consult your tax professional. just because, right. I say that because there are so many I got yous with all of these tax implications. The calculation for the taxes is different if you have other traditional IRAs versus if you don't have any others. I would recommend that you actually do it as soon as you can, because like you said, you're in a lower tax bracket as you're, when you're at your entry-level job. So you have this other 401k that you want to roll to a Roth. Your taxes are going to be a lot less to do the conversion today than when you're, you know, 10, 15 years into your career. So that hit might not be quite as big as you think it's going to be, especially depending on the size of that 401k. So I would look into it, and you can always call if you don't have a CPA. There are H&R Block offices that are open year round. You know, have them run the numbers to see what that tax would be, because it might be a lot less than you think it is.
I didn't even know about the H&R Block thing. That's a good tip, especially for somebody who maybe doesn't have a CPA. Now we're talking about Roth traditional. It's kind of confusing. Andrea, make it simple for us. How would you describe it for somebody who has no knowledge about all these IRAs, Roths, all this tax jargon? Can you break it down in a simple way? What's the difference between a Roth and a traditional?
The biggest difference is whether you get taxed on the front end or the back end. That's basically the easiest summary. So then it goes back to your taxable brackets. Do you want the tax deduction now? And like our guest said, you know, that is going to be such a small break today versus what it would be later, that that's where the Roth comes in very handy. So basically that's the difference. Are you going to get taxed on the front, or are you going to get taxed on the back?
I mean, with policy today too, who knows if taxes are even going to go higher? We talked in mm-hmm. previous episodes about the deleveraging situation that we see unfolding, the big government deficit that we see that's being run, and this unsustainable deficit that the government is running, and this kind of crisis that our country is facing. What's one way? I know one way to break out of that is to raise taxes. And so that only helps people who are in a Roth, but hurts people who don't take advantage of that. Obviously, some people have income. If you make too much money, they won't let you get a Roth. But if you have the opportunity, why not go for it? So kind of moving on, now we have our account picked out. What kind of investments would you make in an IRA? And Miranda, I'm going to start with you and ask you personally, what kind of investments do you make? I'm guessing I know the answer, but can you tell us?
Index funds. Well, index ETFs. And I use Betterment, so there's just kind of a mix in there. There's some international stuff. There are some bond tips, you know, based on the inflation protected securities from the Treasury. And so there's just a, you know, mix of ETFs. But the nice thing about an IRA is it's really, really flexible. Our guest this week mentioned that you could hold many different things in there. You can keep real estate in your IRA. Not that I would. You can do private loans. You can even own businesses in your IRA. There are rules with these kinds of investments in your IRA. I mean, you do have to be able to separate yourself, like, from a business that you hold in there. It can't be like your own business. So there are lots of different rules involved as far as that goes. And you really do need to work with somebody if you're going to start putting non-traditional assets into your IRA. But it can be done. So it's kind of fun in that way because it's so flexible.
Yeah, definitely. Shannon, what about you? What kind of investments do you make in an IRA?
I have the traditional market-based investments, ETFs and mutual funds. But like Miranda said, and like Ron said, I think it's a great point to note that you aren't just limited to what your custodian offers you as far as what you can invest in your IRA. I have a number of clients who have used their IRA funds to invest in things like hedge funds and private equity funds. And where that's a great solution for them is because of the tax situation. A lot of times with hedge funds and private equity funds, there the tax reporting is a real pain if you've invested in it in a taxable account and you're filing your taxes. A lot of times you have to file extensions because you're waiting on the K-1s and the tax information from those funds. But if it's in your IRA, you don't have to worry about the tax reporting. So it's a great way to kind of get around that. And again, like he said, there's just a wealth of options that you can invest your IRA funds in. So you know, just keep that in mind. And like he was saying too, Ron was saying, look for it when you have a substantial amount of money in that IRA. Like I think he said the $50,000 threshold is a good threshold to think about other options.
That's some great information. I'm sure like if you want to do a hedge fund, you'd probably need more than 50 grand.
Yes.
Cool. Andrea, what about you? Do you trade stocks in your IRA?
Yeah, I have kind of, depending on which account it is, it's a mix of stocks, options, and ETFs. But I like to do options there because I can trade a lot more frequently and not worry about the tax implications. Another thing that I'm eventually going to do, but I want the account to be much bigger than it is now, is you can do angel investing also in your Roths.
Angel investing was foreign to most people, 10, 15 years ago. And now there's a definite trend of more people getting into that. And that's really cool that they're allowing you to do that through an IRA. So yeah, why not throw as much money as you can into an IRA? Obviously, there's all these different things you can do. If anything, it doesn't limit you. It helps you. Robert Kiyosaki is someone else who's very famous for sharing that he believes tax avoidance is the key to wealth. I wanted to ask each of you, do you agree with this philosophy that if as long as you avoid taxes, you can get wealthy, and why or why not? Miranda, I'll start with you.
Yeah. So I have mixed feelings about Robert Kiyosaki. I think that he makes some good points in that the mortgage on your primary residence is not an investment. It's your mortgage. And so, I mean, you know, we talk about investing in real estate that way, and that's not true. But I have mixed feelings about this idea of tax avoidance and having that be the key to your wealth. On one hand, I think that, you know, paying taxes obviously is the price of doing business here. And it is one thing that does kind of weigh on your wealth a little bit, but actively avoiding all taxes, I think is kind of, it's kind of like an anti-society thing, right? I mean, our taxes pay for roads, they pay for law enforcement, they pay for our safety, pays for a lot of the things that we enjoy, public school system. And there are a lot of things that we benefit from taxes. And there are a lot of things that wealthy people have benefited from because of the way our system is set up. And part of that is, in fact, taxes. So, yeah, I mean, I guess it can be a key to wealth if you want to screw everybody else. But, I mean, I think there has to be balance there. I mean, you don't want to be too ridiculous with how much you ask for people to pay in taxes. But at the same time, completely trying to avoid them is like saying, hey, yeah, I want to benefit from the system, but I refuse to pay back in. So that's you know, that doesn't really have anything about wealth, but it's just my soapbox. So...
Shannon, what do you think?
I agree with his point about taxes definitely eating into your wealth, and tax minimalization is a way to build and generate wealth. I mean, if you look at for high income earners, tax brackets are, you know, 28 to almost 40%. And you think about almost 40% of your money going out the door in taxes. And you think
about
trying to...
That's not how it works, though. It's marginal tax rate. So the 40%, it's not 40% of all of your money. It's 40% of your money above the last tax bracket. Sorry, go on.
Yeah. Okay. Well, whatever. Even if we say 10%, right? Or let's just say 15%. We don't even have to use the highest levels. If you say 15% of your money is going out in taxes, you think about trying to make that and invest it. It's going to take you a long time to make 15% in this market. And so, I pay taxes. I pay plenty of taxes, and I support the society I live in. But to Robert's point about building wealth, it is true that taxes they limit your wealth generation. And if you can minimize your taxes, then that does add to your wealth. Whether that's better for society or not is a whole different conversation. But as far as the wealth generation, I think he's right.
Andrea, do you have anything to add to, do you think tax avoidance is the key, or do you think there's a different key?
I think it's a broader key. I think instead of focusing on tax avoidance, you should focus on expense avoidance. That encompasses taxes, fees on investments, lattes, you name it, anything that is a drain on your accounts, whether it's your checking account, your investment accounts, will deter you from creating wealth. I think when you focus solely on tax avoidance, you get into very dangerous territory where you're not making smart decisions. I actually had a friend who was so focused on reducing the tax bill that he got into rental real estate, and this guy should not have been in rental real estate. It was not his perfect zone and ended up actually costing himself more money than he ever saved in taxes. So you really need to balance your outlook instead of looking solely at one entity as the end all be all.
I think I look at it this way. I think if you look at all the money that's flowing in through your life is like a water spigot. And if you turn on that water spigot and all that's coming out is drips, it doesn't matter how you partition those drips, you're not going to become wealthy. I really believe that if you want to become wealthy, number one, you need to get that spigot to be stronger. You need to bring more income into your life. And then from there, a combination of using that extra income to create more income, and that's through investing, and a combination of expense avoidance, that's really the key to wealth. We're going to wrap that up for today. As always, you can find all of the show notes, the websites to the guests we had on, both Ron's and Shannon's website, you can find at moneytreepodcast.com. And we want to thank you for listening. As always, it's your money, it's your responsibility, and it's your reward. Work hard, play hard. Thank you, everybody. We will see you next week.
Thank you for listening to the Money Tree Investing Podcast. Visit us at moneytreepodcast.com for more free investing resources.